This meeting is now being recorded.
All right. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 2 Legal Regulatory Issues Call held on the 5th of October, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, would you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid background noise. Thank you, and I'll turn it back over to Michael Fleming.
Thank you, Julie, and thank you, everyone, for joining us this wonderful morning by me, but good afternoon and good evening to you. Can anybody hear me? Nobody has heard me at all. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this morning, and good afternoon and good evening to you, if that is your current time of the world. Today, we are going to discuss closed generics again, and this time, I think we have a good direction for where we're really headed for the future, or at least an agreeable path forward. Last week, we discussed what if we were to have objections, for example, if we were to allow closed generics to and subsequent procedures, how could we allow for a way for them for objections to be filed against them, if those closed generics sought to be against alleged public harms. And this was a discussion that was rather actually very difficult because we looked at the already alleged public harms that were raised in past public comments, and it was difficult to find the standing or at least where those had a good basis to follow through with. So what we did this last week is the leadership team and I had a discussion, and we looked at the case that Kathy has kindly raised, .mobile, and then we also decided to look at other community objections as well. Cheryl, I don't think we have slide control at all, but when we did that, we found common themes where it showed that whether or not the result of the objection itself, how the panelists saw whether or not a community objection against the closed generic would have standing. And I think this is going to be a good discussion for us to look at, because if we're able to look at these community objections and see the common themes, then perhaps we'll be able to find what would be the best path forward for establishing an objection process if we could do so. Now, first of all, I know that I have rushed through the background information, but I do want to, before I forget again, I'd just like to ask if anyone has any SOI updates. Any statements of interest updates? Hearing none, let us continue the conversation. So, Jeff, we did have staff actually put together something, but Jeff has kindly put together a matrix, and I heard about it just 5 minutes before jumping on this call. So, Karen, Karen, you know I can't say your last name without stuttering, so I'm just going to say Karen does have an SOI update. Thank you for sharing that with us. So yes, we did have staff put together a document that kind of showed the areas that we'll be looking at in regards to this call. But Jeff has thrown something together, and I'm going to let him introduce that as soon as
okay. Thanks.
We'll briefly pass it to you.
Yeah, thanks. So it's just going to look very small on your screen. So hopefully there'll be a link that Steve will put up there, and I pretty much spent the last 24 hours reading a bunch of cases because it It turns out that there weren't just one or two of these objections. There were actually at least 12 of them. And I say at least because I think I got them all, but there may be one or two that I skipped that might have also dealt with closed generics. And so I did a matrix, as you can see in front of you. And the matrix has the decision date, the top-level domain, the challenger, the applicant, the type of objection, and the prevailing party, and then quotes taken out of the case. In most cases, I tried not to paraphrase. There were a couple which have short rationales that I didn't take direct quotes, but pretty much said, you know, same as the case above or something like that, just because I didn't feel like writing and copying all the quotes again. So if you go down this list, you will notice that all of them, except for one, were community-based objections. One of them was a limited public interest objection. And all of them, except for one, were won by where the prevailing party was the applicant. But what I think comes out of these, and even in the case that was cited against the or cited in favor of the objector, there are some interesting quotes and comments in those where I think we can start to prepare a test. And in fact, the test is very similar to the test that was applied back in the last round. It's just that before some of these decisions came out, the NGPC part of the ICANN board had already decided what it wanted to do from a policy perspective. But if you look at these cases, starting with the .book case against Amazon, and you'll see that if we ignore the standing requirement right now, because a lot of the challengers didn't meet the standing requirements, in order to bring a community-based challenge, you had to be or represent a substantial part of the community. You had to show that there was basically a nexus between you, your organization, and your and the community, and you had to show that there was that the string was targeted towards your community, and that was kind of the standing discussion. But a lot of these cases, even if they found no standing, they went on to look at the merits of the claims, and in most of these, the sole basis of the claim was that one entity was seeking exclusive control over a dictionary word where it was proposing to use that string for itself. In a couple of these decisions, you'll notice, especially the ones that involve Google or Charleston Road Registry, as they were known, they had actually agreed before the decision came out to open their TLDs pursuant to the NGPC decision. But in others, they did not, or the decision was before that. So if you look at the .book case, which was won by Amazon, there are some, and the material detriment section, you look and see that it says that basically the objector argued that if you gave it to Amazon, if you gave .book to Amazon, that they would be a monopoly and or that they would engage in monopolistic practices. And but the decision said, apart from putting forth any evidence, apart from failing to put any evidence on that point, and to explain how they would engage in monopolistic practices if granted the .book string, the objector misunderstands the concept of monopolistic practice. And then it goes on to talk about why you can't judge an application for a closed generic as being anti-competitive or monopolistic before you see any actions committed, and it says, it's arguable that given the right conditions in some contexts, closed generics may actually stimulate competition in certain sectors by spurring innovation and creativity and by allowing new business models, thus ultimately increasing consumer choice. It cannot simply be assumed that closed generics in general will necessarily restrain trade and by granting this application would cause a likelihood of material detriment to the rights of the legitimate interests of a significant portion of the, and they say hypothetical book community here because they didn't establish a community, but if it had established a community, then I guess the word hypothetical wouldn't be there. But the point is that each of these decisions, and we'll go through some more quotes, each of the decisions apply the material detriment test that's already in the community-based objection standard. And if you look, and it does say ultimately the decision as to, this is still the book decision, ultimately the decision as to whether the operation of a particular string as a closed generic would be, whether they are a good thing or not, is really a policy matter, not for something to be looked at by this particular panel. Meaning that it looks to the particular facts and circumstances. Now I want to contrast that because it's been mentioned a couple times, the .mobile decision, which if you scroll down to, I'm trying to find where it is here. I know it's in here, sorry. Ah, there we go.
Jefferson number 12.
Yep, thank you, sorry. So in line 12, this case has been cited a number of times, and Kathy did a good summary of the decision in the emails. But I want you to look at what's in the bold language there, because I think this is important. Now, the panel has basically said, I am not taking the position that there should or can be no closed registry of generic terms at all. That is a policy question for others to determine. I only take the view that in a case such as this, where a party has shown that it is a community strongly associated with a particular GTLD, and there is substantial opposition in that community to a particular party having a closed registry on that GTLD, there is a strong likelihood that there is a material detriment. So I think that's important because we have been discussing this as, you know, basically a given that all closed generics are by default should be banned, and that's exactly what the NGPC had kind of hinted at. But if you read all of these decisions, none of them say that, even the ones that find in favor of objector. So I think if you take a look at this, and also take a look at the cases themselves, don't just, you know, if I've made any mistakes in any of these quotes and I missed some, please, you know, this is an open document that you can make comments in. So you can certainly, if I got anything wrong here, please go in there. You'll see numbers next to each of the or next to most of the quotes. It should be next to all of them, but I may have missed one or two. Those are the paragraph numbers. Those are the paragraph numbers in the decision. So some of them had a section number, some of them had a paragraph number. So that's what corresponds. So the way I thought we could kind of discuss this today is having something very similar than what we had in the last round that basically said that if you could show a likelihood of material detriment to a substantial portion of the community that the string is targeted against, then in that circumstance, the TLD would not be allowed to go forward. But absent a showing of that, then there should not be a blanket rule against closed generics. So that's just, again, I know that not everyone agrees with that, so please, you know, let's hear your thoughts based on the research that we did and the data we've gathered. This is the way these independent decisions came out. Mike, I don't know if you
Thanks,
want to...
Jeff, I think, yeah. Well, no, Jeff, I think you've summarized it pretty well from how we want to talk about this, but I'm just going to open the floor right now because Paul has his hand up, so go ahead.
Hi there, can you hear me?
That's barely, Paul. You might want to raise that microphone level up.
Yeah, I'll try to speak louder. I'm actually, unfortunately, in the Jeff, that's interesting, but what will that get us if the GAC simply rejects it again like they did last time? Are you talking about putting language in that would specifically say, and this is not something the GAC can object to? Or how would you deal with that? Because there's, you know, there's not a lot of point in going down the road only to hit. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Jeff, did you hear what Cole said?
Yeah, I did. Well, look, the GAC's provided its advice. I don't think that this advice, if you look at the GAC advice basically said that, and if someone could bring it up, because I might the wrong way, but if it didn't outright ban closed generics. What it said is that they should be a finding that the TLD is in public interest, I think is the way that they put it. This is kind of taking the other side of the coin, basically saying that unless it causes a material likelihood a likelihood of material detriment, then it can't be said that it's against the public interest. I know we're saying against the public interest. They're saying they want the burden to be on the applicant to show that it is in the public interest. I guess that's the part that differs from the GAC advice. But again, I'm using these independent decisions that all came out, all looking at this very issue, to try to come up with a common pattern. Hopefully, if this is allowed and this is the rule, then it'll be explicitly stated in the guidebook. Obviously, we can never prevent GAC advice, but hopefully, if this goes out for public comment and it gets accepted, then, hopefully GAC advice will not, even if it came out the same, would not alter the results.
Thank you, Jeff. I've got Greg with your hand up as well. Go ahead, please.
Greg Chatton, for the record. On the Dot Books case, I missed the first couple minutes of the call, but I think I got the gist of it. Sounds to me, as a recovering antitrust lawyer, that the decision was exactly right. But our policy decisions don't have to mirror the law. Given the lack of a clear direction within the policies, it's not surprising that the panel would turn to the law to make a judgment as to whether this was right or wrong. And when you start throwing around legal concepts like monopoly and monopolistic behavior, you're making a legal argument anyway. So you have to use legal rules to judge whether the argument holds water or not. So sounds to me like their arguments held no water legally. So what we do, we need a clear statement of policy against which prospective TLD can be measured. Absent that, we'll get the GAC's idea of what the policy should be, and we'll get objectors saying what they think either the policy or the law should be, and we'll get panels which probably, if there's no clear policy, will once again go back to the law. So if we want something other than the legal version of when someone can and can't do something, then that comes right back down to making policy. But on the law, the decision was correct.
Thanks, Greg. What I'm proposing and what I've been looking at and thinking is that, and what we've been discussing together as the leadership team, is that applications that are for the public interest, I mean, the GAC has clearly stated that, and the NGPC also did this in their own decision, that dictionary terms that are proposed exclusive access where it can be determined that there is harm to the public interest, are basically where originally the GAC advice came out against. However, going forward, if we can put in policy, and as you state, clear policy at that, that the applicant would, the for a dictionary term, sorry, dictionary term for that has proposed exclusive access, where the applicant can show that it is for the public interest, or it can help the public interest in some way, then that could be allowed. However, standing, there could be that we need to have at least some way for the for an objection to be filed against it. And just looking at the community ones that have been filed, perhaps this is a way that we can establish some way forward with that. I'm just, before I go on and on, I've got Jeff, Kathy, and then Greg, you might want to respond to me. So Jeff, you go ahead.
Thanks. This is Jeff. I just wanted to just, because Greg had pointed out that they used the law. They actually didn't use the law. They used the criteria that was set out in the guidebook. And that guidebook went through all of us. So in essence, that was policy. Or at least, maybe not policy. I shouldn't say that. That test was what they used in the guidebook. So it's not like these decisions they cited outside law. And Greg, just to the concept of monopoly, that was what the objector had said, that they were quoting the objector. The objector had stated that Amazon would use monopolistic power, or I forgot the exact term, but would use monopolistic practices to harm the community or whatever they said there. So that wasn't introduced by the panel. I also do want to, everyone should also read the limited public interest objection that was, you know, there's only one of them on this, and that was for Dot Broker. That was filed by TD Ameritrade against IS Group Holdings. So that, I think, should be number 8. Let me just double check and make sure that that's on there. Can't see the numbers on here. But you'll look for the Dot Broker. So it's on the third slide out of 4. And it talks about whether it was against, you know, using the criteria that we all set for the limited public interest objection, it found that no, that there was it was not contrary to general accepted legal norms of morality and public order that are recognized under principles of international law. And they talk about an anti-consumer effect that was alleged by the objector, and they talk about the anti-competition effect that was or claims that were raised by the objector, and it basically said that the objection couldn't be sustained by any general or specific principle of international law for morality and public order. Now, again, the public interest objection was very narrow, so probably not a surprise. But I did want to point that out so that, you know, you all could read that. And I think, I think policy, you know, in a lot of respects, we should look to the law as guidance anyway, for policy, as we do for other types of names and we do for the legal rights objection and other things. So, these decisions each tackle the pros and cons that we've been talking about, and they're done by an independent organization. So I just stress that because, again, we have some people that are on one side that are in favor of closed generics, some that are against closed generics. All of these arguments were raised in this context, and I think this is good reading to kind of put everything into perspective. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. I got Kathy, and then I got Greg. So, Kathy, why don't you go ahead?
Hi, this is Kathy Kleiman. Pleased to be on the meeting. And it's an important discussion. So I just wanted to share that the community objection is a very strange lens for us to be looking at this through. It wasn't designed for closed generic objections. It was designed for communities objecting to various problems. So let me go through the standards for the community objection, which may be entirely different than the standards for whether a closed generic serves the public interest. The standards for community objection were the community invoked by the objector is a clearly defined community, and the community opposition to the application is substantial, and there is strong association between the community invoked and the applied for GTLD string, and the application, and by the way, look for the word monopoly, okay, it's not there. The application creates a likelihood of material detriment to the rights or legitimate interests of a significant portion of the community to which the string may be explicitly or implicitly targeted. And then it says each of these tests is described in further detail below. I'm quoting the applicant guidebook, of course. So monopoly isn't the standard. It's the standard that they were arguing, and I truly wish the Rakuten decision, this was a Japanese group, the Rakuten pleading had been sufficient, and they didn't meet any of the criteria. It wasn't very good pleading, I guess. You know, we didn't see it. The pleadings weren't made public, just the decision, but Rakuten didn't meet any of the criteria in the DotBook objections. So, you know, they're going to fail, of course, on material detriment. But DotMobile and CTIA, the wireless association that represents the mobile wireless industry in the United States, did show that we could meet it. So it's not an issue of monopoly where it always has to be shown after the fact. There was, you know, the panelist did say there is a strong likelihood that there is a material detriment, period. We met the standard. So what I want to raise here is the concern that because of this need to prove a community and the community objections, we may be missing a key criteria, which is that the whole concept of protecting generics under trademark law is to protect competition and newcomers and entrepreneurs, many who may be too small to have formed a community, or maybe they're competing with each other and they choose not. They're not mature enough to form a community yet. But I know McKaylee in the past has talked about that cloud and all these cloud providers coming in. Once that cloud is no longer closed generic, they came into that cloud and have created kind of a really robust community of competitors, but there's a place for them to go. So I would urge us to go to the definition of generic words and look at not that anyone who uses the generic word has to prove that they're part of a worldwide community, but that they have the right to use a generic word because it's the word of their industry. So let's think more broadly about the competition on the Internet and the newcomers and the future newcomers, and also to Paul's issue, how is the new GTLD serving the public interest using the generic? Does appear to be the standard the GATT gave us. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. There's a couple of things I want to respond to. And first of all, I don't think we're looking at the outcome themselves and the community objections themselves as completely the path forward. But basically what was proposed within these community objections. The community objections themselves were not only designed to go against closed dictionary words, as you say, but from how these were filed and the reasons they were filed against applicants that did propose exclusive access for a dictionary term. Now, in regards to whether or not they meet the reasoning for filing the community objection, like I said, we're not looking solely at the community objection as being the path forward here. We're looking at the evidence that has been proposed here in the community objection. Now, if we rule out if we can't even use these findings as evidence for our discussion, then I'd say we'd probably have to rule out the DotBook case as well as the DotMobile case for how we can base future policy. Now, the reason, actually, the idea of community in this and having to establish whether or not you're part of a community is actually something that we're not completely throwing out. While it's not exactly the path forward, it's an interesting concept to consider because if one was to say that there is a harm of competition, per se, and that's a discussion we've been throwing back and forth
quite a bit in the past few calls, and it's from one side says it's after the fact evidence, the other side says that it needs to be predetermined. Now, in that saying, in this sense, if a community, if someone that it does represent the community can come forward and say that it is harm, there is potential harm in that regard, then I can definitely think it might be something that would be better accepted, like the dot mobile case, as you have proposed. But at the same time, if it's not a sufficient representation of the community, like the dot book case, then that's something that may also have to be considered. Now, that's just my two cents on it, with my, with basically my position in thinking that this can be a path forward. Not necessarily my own personal decision, but sure, go ahead.
Again, for newcomers, for entrepreneurs, you've never had to prove your right to use a generic word. In fact, it's just the opposite. Trademark offices protect your right to use the generic word of your industry or community. They don't allow anybody, let's use the word, to monopolize it. So, and that's the idea of protecting newcomers, entrepreneurs, the future. Everyone has the same right to use basic words. So we've got kind of 75 years of precedent. I don't know. It's a tough issue. But having to prove a community up front really takes away from all the future innovators and the new communities, the new businesses, and their new business ideas that will be coming in the future. And it also creates a situation where, in the old days, you guys know I do computer history, so they used to call IBM and the smaller computer companies, you know, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, because IBM was so dominant. And here we may have a situation where the dominant player gets the generic word of the industry and locks out everybody else. They may not be able to prove a global community because they may not be together enough. Anyway, it's a tough issue. Thanks.
Kathy, and just a rhetorical question, not looking for a specific answer, but so are we looking at domain names and trademarks as the exact same thing? Or are we looking at trademarks being tied in the discussion with the specification 13? And if it is just with the specification 13, I'd like to kind of consider that outside of this discussion at this point, because enough discussion in the last few calls has put that outside of the loop and looking at it as a different picture. So if we're going to be looking at the aspect of trademark law in regards to domain names, I think that's something a little bit different. But that's just my two cents on that, and I'm going to let Greg and Jeff go because they haven't been patiently waiting.
And I just want to say, we spend a lot of time looking at domain names and GDLDs through the lens of trademark law. Thanks.
I think this is Greg Shatton for the record. I think, first, there are all kinds of ways to kind of take domain trademark law and apply it to domains where you're not actually talking about trademarks. That tends to fall short in terms of actual analytical lens. We're ultimately talking about a policy decision here, and at the bottom of this is the question of whether the preferred or whether we're making a policy preference for the use of top-level domains to sell second-level domains to the public or some general subset of the public who might meet certain criteria like banks or people from a particular country or city. Or do we not show a preference for kind of the second-level domain use of top-level domains, second-level sales, that is. Obviously, there will be second-level domains, but it seems like there is a definite prejudice, and I don't mean to use the word prejudice in a negative manner, but a definite leaning that we want top-level domains to be used to give different people the right to second-level domains. But I've actually, in all the time I've been in ICANN, and that's not as long as many, or at least some of you, but it's long enough, never actually kind of framed the question that way or heard it framed that way. So kind of curious to kind of talk about it as a matter of first principles, or if there is no principle and we're going to kind of if there is no principle, then how do you decide what's a closed generic? Is dot avuncular or dot meretricious a closed generic? Those are both in the dictionary. Are we only talking about nouns? What kinds of nouns? Or how about adverbs? You know, the whole question of what does generic mean and for whom is it generic, you know, is the question, is part of the question. So I think there are no, I think we need to kind of figure out what we're trying to accomplish here and what we're trying to prefer. Is it innovative top-level domains? Is it innovative second-level domains? Is it, is the concern, is there a policy concern around kind of closed markets? And I think we do need to avoid, I hate to say, using the term monopoly. And I guess, Annabeth, I'm seeing notes about Norway, and I'm just, you know, wondering, is it really the law in Norway that no term with a dictionary meaning can be a trademark for anything? You know, there's a chemist in England called Boots. Would that be not allowed? You couldn't call a pharmacy Boots because there is a meaning for Boots. Norway must have a much smaller trademark register than most countries because arbitrary and suggestive uses of real words make up probably the majority of all trademarks. Curious. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. And the more we discuss the objective of that, you know, the top-level domain in itself, is it for second-party registrations, or, sorry, is it to sell domain names, or is it to allow innovative practices, then I think we'll start to kind of the paradox on the idea, especially what has already been allowed for the 2012 round. But, Jeff, why don't you go ahead and I'll let anybody chime in after that if they have something to say.
Thanks. I also need someone to explain to me what avuncular means and the other word that Greg used. But that could be later. So 2 points I wanted to raise, sort of like what Michael was just saying. I think we need to take a step back and think about whether we want to always continue the same model of domain names that's existed since it commercialized back in the mid-90s, or whether we want to encourage things that are outside the box or new. There seems to be, in some of these discussions, equating the term use and register as being the same thing. So people are saying that because only one party can use the space, it therefore is, sorry, Greg, monopolistic, or whatever term they use. But is it use or is it register? I think those are two very different things. For example, someone could take a .book registry, could own all of the registrations, but it could allow everyone in the world to use the content that is provided through that site. And it could be the best use in the entire world. Who knows, right? There's no way to judge. It could be the worst use. But the point is that we seem to base most of our decisions on registration in the same model that we've had since day one. But I also want, the second point I want to make, which goes to something that Kathy was talking about, was in the dot music decision, at least one of the dot music decisions from the American Association of Independent Music, again against Amazon, they state that in the last two paragraphs I have in that column, right, whether there's market power abuse, support for pirate networks, and all these other things that were alleged by Dot Music, it is not something that can be established beforehand and is thus purely speculative. Should there be any such consequence, competition regulators will very well know how to address these problems, certainly in the context of the U.S. and European Union legislation, which the objector in that case had invoked. And then it said, the last paragraph there, in that it's thus not possible to conclude that this is a case of a likelihood of concrete or economic damage. And it goes on to talk about why they can't do that in that case. And they talk about the similar things of, in fact, the applicant explains that the use of, for example, cars.com has not resulted in any restriction. Now, that said, the other case where they found in favor of the objector, they did say that in that case, the .com could not be considered or was not considered relevant, and that top levels meant something more. So we have different opinions same type of issue, but different opinions. So this is something we need to look towards. And again, I just really want to say that if setting a blanket rule like the NGPC did without allowing any kind of showing that something's in the public interest or requiring someone to establish that there's material detriment just seems to me kind of middle or should be something we should be looking at as opposed to setting a blanket rule. Thanks.
Hey, this is Paul. Can
Thanks,
I get you?
So, oh, Paul, yeah, sure, go thing. Sure, go ahead.
Thank you. So, Paul McGrady for the record. This has been a fascinating discussion, and I think it's interesting. We've looked at the public interest objection. It doesn't quite fit. We've looked at the community-based objection. It doesn't quite fit the closed generics notion. We've looked at trademark law. It doesn't fit. And the reason that none of those fit was because up until a handful of registrars figured out they weren't going to make money on closed generics because they weren't going to be the same standard second-level sales model, none of us had any doubt that closed generics were available under the new GTLD program. In fact, there were, dozens and dozens of applications for closed generics. And so, the applicant guidebook, the stuff that's in there, really is not going to be helpful because nobody was thinking of these things at the time. What we've got in our hands is ICANN picking and choosing which business model it favors and which business model it doesn't favor. It said it wouldn't do that, which is why we ended up with contention sets and why we ended up in auctions. ICANN was agnostic about business models when it came to contention sets. They didn't seem to have the strength of will to go through them and pick the business model that they liked best out of all the applicants, and so instead they sold it off for money. But they didn't seem to have that compunction when it came to essentially saying, well, the business model we like best are open second-level sales, and by the way, that also fuels our revenues, so no closed generics, everybody. And so essentially, ICANN needs to decide, is it capable of consistently taking the position that it won't choose which business models that it likes and dislikes, that it favors or disfavors? In such case, continue to run your auctions, I guess. But if they are going to pick and choose the business models that it likes under one circumstance but won't do it under the other, then I think they need to be consistent and just come clean and say, okay, we're going to pick which business models that we like and what we don't like, and then we can figure out what criteria those may be. And then whoever fits within ICANN's, closely drawn square box gets TLDs, and those who don't. But I think we need to call this out for what it was, which was ICANN choosing which business model it preferred for whatever reason, pressure from registrars, pressure from GAC, who cares. ICANN went off its own rails on this particular thing, and we either need to get it back on the rails and have them quit picking business models, or if they're going to pick business models, they need to do that for all the business models, for all the applications, and let's do away with, the $500,000 in auctions that they squeezed out of all of it. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. And Paul raises a very interesting question, a very interesting point. At the current time, there's nothing in policy and there's nothing in ICANN's bylaws that basically deters the business model, innovative business models, or an operation of a registry in a way, an exclusive operation of a registry, be that closed generic specification 13 or any other way. It's ICANN's core value is in the promotion of registrations of second level domain names. And with that, of course, that can be loosely interpreted, but at the same time, stated as it is, that doesn't say how the registry has to be operated in that regard. Kathy, you have your hand up. I'll let you go ahead. Thank you.
Sure. Just wanted to share, of course, what I put in the email, that there is considerable different understandings of what was in the applicant guidebook, and that I circulated reference to materials as well as attached a letter from Microsoft, but that a number of senior attorneys in the field, many of whom have a lot of experience with ICANN, came back and said, hey, you know, this is not, we didn't see closed generics in the applicant guidebook, that what we understood was that when a registry was going to be the registrant of all domain names, that was going to be the special case of a brand. So here, it's actually all those wonderful things you envision could go completely under any other GTLD that you want to create, just not the generic that is the common everyday name for the goods and services, and everyone has the right to use such terms to refer to their goods and services. Of course, I'm quoting the U.S. Trademark Office. Pick any other word, abbreviation, acronym, anything of, you know, your goods and services, and go ahead and create that closed TLD. I can see that you're going to, you know, be going in that direction. But closed generics, the reason people want them is to lock out the competitors. That's, you know, that's what we're seeing again and again, whether people won their community objections. That's what companies big and small are telling us, and that's why people said they wanted it. Thanks.
Kathy, and to kind of address that really quickly before I go to Alan, one of the things we're discussing is to have some form of transparency or some form of basically being able to visibility, to be able to read not exactly what the business plans of that applicant be, for example, but something within the aspect of being proposing the closed dictionary term, closed generic, however you want to say it, would be within the points or within the boundaries of public being for the public interest. And how you interpret that, of course, is another discussion, but at the same time, I think we're headed in the right direction in regards to that. Alan, let you go ahead here. I like to talk, but you can go ahead.
Thank you very much. I really wasn't going to comment on this whole discussion, but I've got to disagree with Paul. I don't think that we were favoring one business model over another when it was ruled that closed generics were potentially problematic. I agree. We do want innovative business models. On the other hand, the overall public good, the public interest, is something that we have to consider. I don't have the magic answer, but I'll make give an example. When we were talking in the very early stages of the new GTLD program, and I'm going back to 2007, the classic one that was always used as examples was .bank. And I don't think there was ever a single discussion where it was conceivable that a single bank was going to apply for this and monopolize the term at the expense of the other banks. It was always pictured that it would somehow be a TLD for banks. And although the concept of closed generics did come up on occasion, and in fact, at one point, someone asked, what about .books? And somebody from ICANN said, yeah, that would be fine. I don't think that was a community decision, and I believe we never really conceived of the closed generic as we're talking about it now in the early discussions, or I think we would have done something about it. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And Christina, is that you have your hand raised? But you know, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to respond directly to Alan. I'm just going to say thank you, and I would like to respond that at a later point. But I'm going to let Christina go ahead first.
Yeah, Christina Rosette, Amazon Registry. I think we need to be really careful about making allegations about the motivations of applicants unless we have data to substantiate that. For example, I don't think we've seen any data or any statements or any evidence that all of the applicants that submitted TLD applications for dictionary terms and indicated that they would restrict registration to themselves and their affiliates did so with the intention to exclude competitors. And as I said in Johannesburg, and I will continue to say again and again and again as needed, that one tremendous opportunity that the so-called closed generic model allows is the opportunity for the registry to innovate with new business models, with new services, and new ways to use the DNS that are the entire purpose of this program. So while I certainly don't purport to speak for any other TLD applicant, I can tell you that Amazon's intention for filing the applications that it did was to have a model under which they could innovate and experiment and then expand out to third parties once those opportunities prove themselves.
Thanks, Christina. And I see the chat going in a direction to that I want to kind of bring us back together really quick, basically to say that, okay, first of all, the trademark aspect, for example, the trademark specification 13 discussion is we're going to consider that outside of this, because I think we've all agreed that trademarks are established and the specification 13 is something that we can accept. And then we're also, and those aren't necessarily dictionary terms. Now, taking that outside of that, and we're discussing this in the dictionary terms, exclusive registry access being used within the public interest discussion. Now, just with that set forward, I'm going to let Jeff go forward.
Thanks, Michael. I'm just taking off my co-chair hat and speaking as an individual. I can't let it stay on the record that people did not anticipate this model going forward. In fact, most people, I would say, that were either involved in preparing applications or working with companies to prepare applications and working on the guidebook and spending all those years talking to get people trying to get applicants, I can tell you right now, everyone thought of it. In fact, if you go back to the record, and I'm going to, I remember asking Kurt Pritz when he was at ICANN a question about making something up about Kraft applying for dog food, probably because I had macaroni and cheese just before that. But point is, to say that people didn't expect it, it's just a load of you know what. In fact, one of the decisions, and I think it's the book.com one, cites Avery, who also put it in the chat here. They cite Avery while she was chairing the committee saying that this was a model that was expected. They actually found that quote. So, you know, again, just because some lawyers after the fact who mostly were working for competitors of strings that were out there said that they didn't think that this was the way it was supposed to be used does not in any way, shape, or form mean that it wasn't anticipated. If that were the case, there wouldn't have been so many applications that advocated this type of model. But all of that said, doesn't necessarily matter going forward. What matters is, do we keep the general rule prohibiting all closed generics, or do we see And do we actually adopt the GAC advice, which talks about that it must be in the public interest, or do we adopt these other standards that were used in the community objections to see if there's a likelihood of material detriment? And I think, again, establishing a blanket rule is not the way we should be heading, in my personal view, because I think it does ignore some innovative models that, at the end of the day, would benefit consumers. Maybe not registrants, but it would benefit consumers and users at the end of the day. I can think of nothing better than having the American Red Cross, even if they didn't own the trademark for Red Cross, or actually the American Red Cross owning something like .disaster, so that they could make sure that all donations to any type of disaster that gets its own second level names could go to hurricane relief or shootings relief and all that other kind of stuff. I can think of nothing more beneficial. So anyway, thanks. I'll get off my soapbox. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. And that is the point I want to put forward as well. How are we looking at this going forward? And let's consider this with a can't think of the term right now. I'm sorry. I'm drawing a blank right now. Kathy, you go ahead, and I'll try to collect my thoughts.
Hi. Kathy Clemen, I agree we have to find a path going forward, but again, I can't leave Jeff Newman's talk speech uncontested with the thunder and lightning of his role as co-chair. There were a number of us who were shocked when we saw, and I know we're not supposed to talk about brands, we've already heard, when we saw that things other than brands, whether those are dictionary words or not, the trademarks and brands, when we saw that those things that weren't brands where the registry was going to own all the registrations, every single one of them. And, a number of people came out. McKaylee and I are not well known for lying, guys. And there were many other senior attorneys who came out behind us. So, and independently and filed their objections, as well as the entire world that said, there were 264 comments from across the world. They'd never been as diverse. Now, some of them, of course, supported it, but most of them did not, and that's why the ICANN board acted. So anyway, we do have to find a path forward, but there was no clear understanding of the applicant guidebook. Thanks.
Kathy, and respectively, I'd like to say that Jeff said that it was his personal opinion when he stated that he did just previously. So collecting my thoughts, I do want to ask the same question again. And could we collectively, as a group, consider that we do agree with the aspect of innovative TLDs, and we do agree that not all TLD business models should only be for the registration by third parties. Now, when we consider that, we need to consider all TLD types as well, the community, the geo, as well as the specification 13 that is a blanket rule. Not a blanket rule, but English is not my friend this morning. Is an exception to the aspect of this open type of TLD registry access. Now, in that aspect, if we would oppose this within the public interest, and not defining that public interest, because nobody within ICANN has been able to do that yet, but showing within the application, this is something that the registry or the applicant can say in some form, without revealing all their business secrets, of course, that how they plan to use this in an exclusive way for the public interest. And at the same time, we allow the path forward, and we don't have to necessarily establish a new objections procedure, because we've seen it work with community objections as well as limited public interest objections to oppose something where it's an exclusive access. Could we see that as a path forward? I'm just going to ask that question out there, and I don't want to go off the rails on this. I want yes or no, and your reason why. So can anyone respond to that in that aspect? Or at least, and it doesn't have to be exactly as I stated it, of course, but something like that. Greg, give your hand up. Please go ahead.
Maybe a case of fools rush in where angels fear to tread, but wouldn't be the first time. So if I understand the question correctly, I would say first that we should not favor, as a policy matter, models that involve the sale of second-level domains to third parties. As far as what's in the public interest, I would not say that that model is more favorable to the public interest than other forms of innovation using top-level domains. And I'm not arguing this because I think that there's something wonderful about to happen, but if we won't know if we don't let it happen. And I think that if we, as somebody else said, continue to try to just foster the current model, then we're not going to end up with innovation. And the problem with the public interest is that every attempt to define it has failed, and it's very hard to tell what is or isn't in the public interest until you get very far from kind of the center of the question. You know, clearly putting botulism in the food supply is not in the public interest. Giving everybody free money may or may not be in the public interest. A lot of lottery winners have gone bankrupt and had bad life experiences. So trying to predict what the public interest may be in the context of innovation seems to me to be a poor idea. Thanks.
And once again, I just want to say that this isn't necessarily a personal opinion. This is just a co-chair idea of how we could move forward, and that's why I'm asking for comments now, and I'm loving the feedback. Holly, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
It's just an example of a closed generic that, sitting on a names panel for the .au space, we considered having .bank as closed, and the only people who could use .bank would be those who actually had registered with our corporate regulator, so that the public could then look at anything using .bank.au and know that that user was listed with our corporate regulator. So from my perspective, that was an example of, say, a public interest in giving the public certainty that, yes, it's a generic, but the generic indicates a process behind that to ensure that if it's use.bank.au, you can be sure that that .bank is actually registered, knowledgeable, and corporately regulated. Just an example on the other side, but I thought that possibly would help the discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Holly. Alan, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I think we're in a position, in a situation where almost anyone's comments, we can say, yes, you have a point. Greg is right. Not allowing it at all is fraught with damage. Allowing it completely without any restriction is not fraught with damage. It's fraught with danger, and allowing it completely is fraught with danger. I think our challenge is to find the way in between, and yes, evaluating whether something is in the public interest is going to be subjective and difficult, But I don't see how we're going to get around doing something like that, because otherwise we are opening up the door or closing the door to things that we either don't want or want. Sorry to have a confusing sentence, but you know, all the clean answers, you know, anyone can do it or no one can do it, are not where we want to go. So it's got to be somewhere in the middle with some level of restrictions. Thank you.
Sorry about that. Thank you, and that's exactly what I'm proposing, what I'm looking at, trying to do here. I'm somewhere within the in-between. I'm just trying to find what that in-between is. Gigi, you've got your hand up. Please go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, we can hear you. We heard you. Gigi, we don't hear you anymore.
He's gone.
Gigi, I do not hear you.
This is Paul. Can I go into
Q? Yes, please go ahead.
So, I think that we should take the next step that you're – oh, by the way, Paul McGrady for the record. I think we should take the next step that you're inviting us to take, right, and figure out what the criteria would be for a closed generic that, adds some benefit. I don't want to use public interest because, as Greg said, who knows what that means, and everybody in our ecosystem, wants to be the decider of that. But maybe we could, brainstorm out some possible criteria that might indicate the level of innovation that the applicant is looking to do is equally a good as even more second-level domain name registration. I know that Alan didn't think that it was fair for me to say that ICANN chose which business model that it liked, but, it just actually did. And if we don't like that decision and we wanted to think about other business models, then we need to think about the criteria, I guess, not unlike what we did for how we were able to determine, who got a community-based application, right? Some other 14 different things you had to jump through. Well, why don't we write down 3 or 4 and kick them around and see if that makes us think of other things. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. And that is what I'm inviting people to do. I was kind of heading in that direction since our last call, but since no one else had proposed anything, I tried to come up with a way that we could consider that. But I'm liking the feedback now, and that it seems that people are beginning to want to think about this and proposing things from their own side. So that way, that's a great path forward for us to seek the middle ground. Jeff, you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. And just kind of the corollary to what Paul said, I, and for those of you that may have heard me this weekend during the Brand and Domains Conference, I kind of said the same thing. ICANN operates on a ask permission model, opposed to a model where they allow something to happen unless you can show harm. I prefer the latter, that things should be allowed unless they are showing harm. So, again, I think, Paul, instead of saying what would be acceptable criteria for good things to allow something to go forward, because I know a lot of companies that apply for this may not want to reveal that in their application as part of a competitive advantage, or something that they would want to do that they wouldn't necessarily want their competitors to know. It should be the opposite, and that's why I introduced all of these decisions and wrote summaries up of each of them. It should be criteria that we know we don't like, and that someone can show that criteria is likely to be met or beforehand or even after the fact. If that criteria or that those bad things are engaged in, then there is a dispute process. So there's something to protect it at the beginning and something to protect it afterwards. I think that is probably an easier way to go. And this way, ICANN's not choosing between business models. Thanks.
And so this is Paul. Can I respond?
Thank you. Just 1 second. I just want to make clarity with Jeff. Jeff, is that a personal opinion or a co-chair opinion?
Everything on this call has been a personal opinion. The summaries are drafted in my personal capacity. The comments are all in my personal capacity. Everything I say between now and Monday until I co-chair that call is in my personal capacity.
Thank you, Jeff. Just seeking that clarification. Paul, you have the floor.
Thanks. So in response to what Jeff said, I think that that is eminently sensible. I think a permissionless internet is what we all used to say we believe in, and I think that that's a good thing. So it's fine to draft them in the negative instead of the positive. I think that we'll get much better outcomes than if we just, don't address this and end up with, people coming forward saying they never anticipated it, and then the party who shouts the loudest wins. I don't think that that was I think round one was a bad outcome on that because it was the loudest shouters who won. Let's build some criteria. We could make them in the negative. Like, here's the negative criteria. Does not, innovate. How about that, right? Something like that. We can start baking in negative criteria if we like. And I just think that we should start doing that. We should start plopping stuff down on paper and kick them around. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. So with that said, unless there's anyone else that wants to raise their hand, I'd like to open Kathy, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Kathy Kleinman. There's a lot of agreement in private areas for Paul's original proposal that there'd be some threshold when you're dealing in generics and the perspective of closed generic to show it up front. I think that's what we're arguing now, right? Up front versus after the fact. So there's some concern that the major competitor comes in and it's going to be very difficult for smaller companies, again, these competitors, entrepreneurs, that the threshold should be met up front, and that's, I think, what the GAC has asked us for as well. So there is some diversity here. Thanks.
Kathy, do you have any ideas for criteria for how that should be met?
I think Paul laid it out nicely. I wish I'd been taking more notes of what one would show. Because, again, you have, the infinity of the new GTLD space, anything that's not taken already, basically you can apply for with some limitation. So you've got an infinity to put all sorts of creative business models. But when you're dealing with closed generics, some kind of showing up front that you will be operating in the public interest. And, again, Paul laid it out very nicely, like a community showing. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Greg, you have your hand raised as well. Please go ahead.
Chatting for the record. Don't normally feel like I'm saying something capitalistic, but the public interest shouldn't only be community interest. Commercial interest can be in the public interest, too. We're talking about innovative business models. As well as other kinds of innovative models for top-level domains. So I don't think we should have kind of some sort of a not-for-profit idea about what a so-called closed generic might be. Even the term closed generic is non-neutral. It seems to me that the idea that we're shutting off entrepreneurs from the internet because a particular top-level domain is not available for them to register a second-level domain in, to me, seems far too precious. Not precious in terms of valuable, but precious in terms of twee. Of course, there are lots of synonyms, as there are lots of synonyms for lots of things. Which is one of the problems with this whole argument about foreclosure and monopoly and all that stuff. Fact of the matter is if nobody registers .jewelry, then it's not available either. Maybe ICANN should own all the top-level domains and sell second-level domains. That's another model, completely different
Woo.
Model.
But then
we're all about the second-level domains. But clearly we've made a decision that a lot of different entities should own top-level domains and do a lot of different things with them, trying to decide which things are bad up front. Seems to me to be almost guaranteed to be short-sighted. And because one of the things about innovation is that nobody else thought of it yet. So trying to allow innovation while foreclosing certain types of activities is a contradiction in terms. Thank you.
This is Paul. Can I just do a quick clarification?
Yes, Paul, please do.
2 seconds. Just to what Kathy said, I want to be clear that I wasn't suggesting that we adopt the community-based application criteria. I was simply pointing to that as an analogous situation in which the community did put together criteria. And so I think that we are capable of putting together criteria, and I'm perfectly fine for it to be along the lines that Jeff discussed, which is, you know, essentially, you know, permissionless, rather than having to go and seek permission. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. Jeff, you have your hand raised as well. Greg, assuming it's old hand, or old hat, maybe.
Yeah, thanks. If we went with the, as Paul just said, kind of the permissionless model, I kind of see this analogous to how controversial vertical integration was for those of you that were involved in that. At the end of the day, nobody really kind of liked it, but it was permissionless in the sense that, but what happened is you can vertically integrate, but if you did, then you had to live by a code of conduct, you had to do all sorts of things, still have to do all sorts of things to make sure that you're not taking too much advantage of being vertically integrated or causing the harm that everyone thought could happen with vertical integration. And it seems like so far, you know, we haven't had that many complaints about abusing the vertical integration. Not saying it's perfect, but by any means, but if we adopt a very similar model where we build in protections, you don't have to ask permission, but you can have there could be objections at the beginning, and there could be a code of conduct or something akin to a dispute process, compliance issue after the fact if you go against or start committing those harms that we think that could arise if you are a closed generic and do not use it in the sense that you're supposed to, I guess. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. So I'm hearing some really good, I think I'm finally hearing us start to agree, I dare say, and I think we're starting to agree on a middle ground here. Now, if anyone disagrees with that, I invite them to say that now. And Alan, I'm going to let you go ahead. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm not sure I disagree, but caution flags are waving in my head anyway. ICANN does not generally like third-party beneficiary agreements, you know, where someone else can object to the agreement. It does like dispute processes where if you look at the public interest dispute process, a third party can come in and say, you know, you're doing something wrong, but you have to show damage. You have to show harm already. And by the time there's harm, I'm not sure it's the right time to object. So I don't object to the concept, but finding a mechanism to do it I find really more difficult than having, I won't say permission, but having some sort of caveats and structure to allow you to use a closed generic. And not just relief after the fact of some way, because it's going to be really hard to seek that relief. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. And Kathy, before I go to you, could I please just state this? I invite anyone to put in writing what they can consider as criteria or a path forward and propose that to the overall working track group by our next call, which is next Thursday, I believe, so that we may consider that. And Kathy, you're saying that we should have two different models forward. And definitely, I just want to see if we can have a bit more clarity in regards to what that is, and if we could put that down so we may consider that before our next call. So, Kathy, please go ahead.
Sounds fair, and Kathy Kleinman. And I'll just say, Alan took the words out of my mouth, that the caveats and structure should be up front, and that it's really hard to seek the relief after the fact, especially when it's the biggest competitor in the field that's involved. Thanks.
And if there are no more comments, again, that's an open invitation, and I'm going to try to see if I can't collect the discussion here to propose something as well, propose something as a co-chair capacity, most likely, of course. But I give everyone back 6 minutes of their day and want to say thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Is there anything else to say? If not, that is the final word.
Thank you, Michael. Great call.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll take that as an acceptance of the final word. All right. Thank you again, everyone.
And I don't say that often on these calls. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Have a good day, everyone.
Thanks for joining, everyone. Have a good day. And ending the recording.